Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us this Easter weekend. George Orwell said, quote, "We sleep peacefully in our beds at night only because rough men stand ready to do violence on our behalf," end quote. That's very true, and we all know it. And we salute the brave men and women in our military and in law enforcement who protect us. Well, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. What's new, Skip?
Well, Colonel, happy Easter to you and all of our listeners. And speaking of rough men, we were hacked. Our website was hacked this last week. And boy, our geeks are working on it right now, but they've been unable to post our podcast to our website since the first of this month. And Colonel, the only thing we're trying to figure out is who did this to it? Was it the Russians, the Chinese, or the Democrats? We're still looking into it.
I look forward to the report when you get it figured out. But, you know, we're almost 15 years old, and this is the first time this has ever happened. Does that mean we did something right, or do we did something? I don't know. Stay tuned, folks. We'll let you know if we figure it out. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss what winning in Ukraine may look like. Then Chief War Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his insights. The Marine General Mark Lott will be discussing his book, And Justice for All. Then we'll talk with Army veterans John Berry Jr. and Sr. They founded Berry Law, helping veterans. And Army vet Ian Newell will discuss the transition from soldier to civilian job.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show, so send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel of Frontlines of Freedom. First, my comments on Ukraine. This past week, multiple Ukrainian sources reported that the Moskva, Moscow, the flagship of Russia's Black Sea Fleet, had been hit by two Neptune anti-ship cruise missiles fired from near Odessa. The missile is a native Ukrainian design based on the Russian KH-35, but it has superior range and accuracy. It has a range of about 175 miles and only entered active service in 2021. And the Russian Defense Ministry has announced that the Moskva is heavily damaged, the crew evacuated. I feel it's very safe to say that Ukraine is still in the fight. We need to keep praying for and supporting Ukraine. And now for more news on the war in Ukraine and other news, here's co-host Skip Coriel. Take it away, Skip.
Well, Colonel, Ukrainian President Zelensky has revealed that an EU member state's leader called into question Kiev's version of events surrounding the Bucha killings, asking for proof that the atrocities were not staged. Speaking to German newspaper Bild, Zelensky described how a leading EU politician asked him for evidence proving that the Bucha massacre had not been staged. The remark came after the Bild journalist asked what the worst thing he had heard in recent days was. When the interviewer probed further, asking whether it was the head of state of an EU nation, Zelensky replied in the affirmative, though he refused to name the official. Ukraine claims Russian troops committed atrocities against civilians in the town of Bucha near Kiev before retreating. Russia has rejected the accusations and claims Kiev manipulated evidence in what it calls a provocation. Commenting on Berlin's support for Kiev, the Ukrainian president lamented Germany's apparent lack of enthusiasm for tougher sanctions against Russia. Asked if he was prepared to sit down with Russian President Putin and talk, Zelensky said, quote, "Today, Ukraine has no way out other than to sit down at the negotiating table," unquote. He added that no one else in Russia has the power to stop this war, as Putin is the only one who decides when this war will end. Britain's Boris Johnson, one of Ukraine's staunchest backers, flew to Kiev to pledge tighter sanctions on Russia and offer Zelensky more defensive arms, a move the Ukrainian leader said others should follow.
Zelensky is right. Indeed, more Western nations, all of nations that object to a Russian-style invasion, should be supporting Ukraine, both diplomatically and with resources.
China has described reports and images of civilian killings in Ukraine as disturbing, and urged that they be further investigated, even while declining to blame Russia. That's drawn questions about the resiliency of Beijing's support for Moscow, but speculation that it is weakening appears to be misplaced. Crucially, the Chinese spokesman did not mention Russian forces and gave no indication of how evidence should be gathered or by whom. China has a lengthy history of providing political cover for its friends after incidents such as the sinking of a South Korean Navy ship in 2010. China called that unfortunate, but refused to accept evidence North Korea was responsible. Beijing also routinely turns accusations of war crimes back on the accusers, mainly the United States, citing the Iraq invasion. Beijing early on committed itself to the position that Russia was provoked into attacking its neighbor by the eastward expansion of NATO under U.S. direction, even though Putin has not listed that as his primary motive for invading. China has abstained in votes at the UN condemning Russia's actions and in keeping with standard policy, has strongly opposed economic sanctions against Russia. However, China shows no signs of undermining those sanctions or filling the void left by the departure of Western companies from Russia.
It's my observation and belief that dictatorships will always support each other unless they're fighting each other.
Since 2020, Navy SEALs have been unable to stealthily train at Washington State Parks. That pause could become permanent if an April 1 ruling from State Superior Court Judge Dixon isn't overturned on appeal. Navy SEALs first began training at state parks in the early 1980s and appeared poised to expand that use from 5 to possibly 17 parks or more under a motion approved by the State Parks and Recreation Commission in January 2021. It was a high-profile, controversial decision that drew hundreds of public comments. The SEALs training exercises are intended to be undetectable by the public. Critics have opposed the training as a kind of militarization of state parks and were upset about the idea that part of the exercises would have included surveillance of park activity. In a scathing verbal opinion from the bench, Dixon found that the legislature never granted the authority to permit military uses to the State Department of Parks and Recreation. Washington State has long offered wide-ranging military training opportunities in the air, at sea, and on land, and the judge's decision marked a rare moment when a state court set a limit to where such exercises can take place.
Okay, part of this is privacy. I understand that. Another part is, if we want our SEALs to be very effective in defending our nation, then they have to train. And if not here, then where?
A memo from the Department of Veteran Affairs Office of the Inspector General recently acknowledged the VA is calculating patient wait times using multiple methods and incomplete and/or selective data sets. This produces different, inconsistent sets of wait times, creating or adding to uncertainty and confusion when a veteran needs care. Additionally, the VA seems to have used these flawed calculations and data as evidence of performance success and compliance with the law. Veterans groups have been calling out the VA's transgressions in both calculation and presentation of patient wait times. Further and more aggravating is the admission the VA has been using this incorrect data as evidence of superior or matched performance compared to the private sector.
I can only imagine the frustration a veteran must experience when they can't get a straight answer on how long it will take to get care. Personally, I've never had that problem. I can't understand why the VA would resist having a standardized wait time and remove variables that only muddy the waters more than they already are. And that's the news. Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you in getting involved and in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do personally. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. We'll enjoy some more wisdom. And then we'll talk with Major General Mark Lott about justice for all. At ease, troops, take a break. Day 3 Creation is a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products. Our Get Relief, Give Relief program sees that 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing service dogs at no cost to disabled veterans to help restore their physical and emotional independence. Giving is an expression of our thankfulness and praise to God as we recognize that everything we have belongs to the Lord. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. You hear the sound of breaking glass at 2 a.m. What should you do? Many people get a flashlight to investigate, but that could get you killed. Get your firearm immediately. Take up a defensive position in your safe room, then call 911 and wait for the police to arrive. The police can do the job they were trained for, and you and your family can stay safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
My fellow patriots, in these troubling times, it is more important than ever for us to take care of our fellow Americans. That's what Patriot Foods stands for, U.S.-only grown foods. When you make an online purchase, you are supporting a U.S. farmer and our great veterans every time. Don't mistake Patriot Foods for survival food. This is an American farmer brand. Visit patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today. That's patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers, and it's good. I love it. Check patriotfoods.com. That's patriotfoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. You know, Russia has four times the population of Ukraine. It enjoys well over 10 times Ukraine's gross domestic product. And geographically, Russia is nearly 30 times bigger. So this is not exactly a fair fight between equals. And the little kid didn't start the fight. So how does Ukraine expel Russian troops when its Western allies must put restrictions on their vital military and financial aid? The interests of Europe and the U.S. are not quite the same as those of beleaguered Ukraine. NATO also wants President Putin humiliated, but only if the war can be confined within the borders of Ukraine. The West seeks support for the theoretical rules-based international order that prevents invasions from across national borders, but not at the price of a nuclear exchange. So, to achieve these wonderful goals, the West restricts some of its supplies to Ukraine. It sends plenty of lethal weapons, as long as they will not provoke a losing Russia into doing something stupid, like using tactical nuclear weapons to save face. There are other complications. Time is fickle. In theory, it should favor an energetic Ukraine. The longer the war goes on, the more sanctions will hurt the Russian economy and, reasonably, undermine Russian public support for the war. On the other hand, the longer the war continues, the greater the Russian losses and the fewer acceptable off-ramps for Putin, all the more likely he will grow desperate and seek desperate solutions. Okay, Putin isn't now fighting to force Ukraine back into the Russian Federation. He's no longer worried about destroying infrastructure that he once felt would return to being valuable Russian assets. Instead, Russia's going crazy in eastern Ukraine, leveling cities, murdering civilians, and destroying an entire modern society for generations. Indeed, after Ukrainian troops pushed back the Russians in Bucha, a suburb of Kyiv, they found civilian corpses strewn throughout the city, most showing signs of having been tortured. There were landmines the Russians had hidden in the homes and within the corpses. Women had been raped in front of their children. Men had been executed with their hands tied behind their backs. Instead of fighting their enemies, the Ukrainian military, the cowardly Russians committed crimes against humanity as they fled. But flee they did. There is as yet no deterrent force that can stop Putin's bombs and missiles and disrupt his destructive strategy. Again, Putin apparently feels liberated because he doesn't care about international opinion and less than nothing about Western outrage over reported Russian war crimes. Instead, he's using the carrot and the stick. He believes his stick, the unpredictable Russia with their 7,000 nukes, and his carrot, becoming the world's largest daily producer of oil, these can eliminate the lofty talk about humanity. So, the war has become more complex precisely because Putin failed in his initial effort to decapitate the Ukrainian government, storm the cities, and install a puppet government. Putin's strategy is now both simpler and harder to stop. He will claim victory by creating Russian states in the Donbas region and Crimea. In the meantime, his air attacks will render eastern Ukraine an inert wasteland that will require decades to rebuild. Even after an armistice, Putin can periodically threaten more destruction to western Ukraine should he feel that Kyiv is once again growing too close to Europe. So can Ukraine ever win? Ukraine must gain air superiority through the use of more sophisticated and larger anti-aircraft batteries and more SAMs and Stinger smaller systems. Some NATO nations may have to send Ukraine their Soviet-era fighters to replace losses, with conditions that they stay inside Ukrainian airspace, like Poland is trying to do, and our government is stopping the transfer. That's weird. Second, the supply war must no longer be seen as a larger Russian economy versus a tiny Ukraine. Instead, Putin must now war against the supply chain of all of Europe and the U.S., and it's all out of his reach. The Ukrainian war machine will grow only if fueled by allies that, combined, account for 70% of the world's GDP. Putin cannot stop the influx of Western help unless he threatens the use of nuclear weapons. Ukraine may reach a tipping point soon if it can both stop Russian air attacks and expel Putin's ground troops from his cities. But Kyiv can't invade Russia and hit its supply depots. It can't go nuclear to deter future Russian invasions. It can't shame an evil Putin on the world's humanitarian stage. And it can't join NATO to win the direct help of 30 other nations. But what Ukraine can do is push Russian troops back to the border regions and let the Russian-speaking Ukrainian borderlands work out their own relationships with the now blood-soaked and unreliable Putin. It can inflict such destruction on the conventional Russian military that Putin will fear he will suffer an even worse humiliation than the U.S. did after Afghanistan. Ukraine can also seek an armistice along the Black Sea coast. It might have to agree to some sort of demilitarized zone and small-scale population exchanges to ensure that the Crimea does not become a permanent battleground. All that is not an outright victory, but it's something, and that something was not even imaginable when Russia invaded in late February. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
You know, last week I had a great opportunity to fly my plane down to Lakeland, Florida, and attend the annual Fun and Sun Air Show. There's nothing like flying into Lakeland with hundreds of other aircraft and then camping under the wing of the plane. The military was in full force in Lakeland with aircraft and other equipment from the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, and the Coast Guard. The Navy's Rhino demo team showed off the F-18 Super Hornet. The Air Force brought both the F-22 and the A-10 demo teams along with the Thunderbirds. And one of the really cool things were the heritage flights, where they'd pair up a modern aircraft like an A-10 with a World War II plane such as a P-51 in flying formation. Now, last week, I mentioned the high cost of both the Navy's Blue Angels and the Air Force's Thunderbirds. Just the cost of fuel for a one-hour air show is likely more than $50,000. And the military says these teams are for both showing the public the military's capabilities and also for recruiting. So I ask the question, do we really need to spend so much money for recruiting, as over the past two decades, recruiting really hasn't been an issue for the Air Force? Well, I guess I was wrong. At the end of last year, the Air Force announced that it achieved its recruiting and staffing goals for the first time in half a decade. According to the Air Force magazine, there are more than 500,000 currently serving in the Department of the Air Force, which includes the Space Force. However, they're saying for 2022, the goals are going to be tougher to hit than it has been in over a dozen years. Due to COVID and the overall U.S. labor shortages, the pool of candidates is about half of what it should be. In fact, the Air Force is now offering enlistment bonuses for many jobs such as maintenance, cyber operations, linguistics, and special operations. They'll even add an extra $8,000 bonus to anyone who can start basic training within 5 days of signing up. And the Air Force is also having a hard time keeping their pilots. They've also rolled out a new program giving active duty pilots who renew their contracts up to $420,000 in bonuses. So, I guess I was wrong. Maybe the Air Force really does need the Thunderbirds to recruit new talent. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I learn new things about our military every time you share. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss justice in our nation with General Mark Lott. Then we'll talk with Army vets John Berry Jr. and Sr. from Berry Law. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Start with 40, take a break, do another 30, then stand at ease.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome retired Marine Major General Mark Plott. Mark's done a lot of things in his service as a Marine, but he's also been working on things that specifically impact all of us. Indeed, he's written a book that is really compelling. Well, I want to talk about that. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mark, start by telling us about your Marine career. When and why did you join? Tell us about some of your key assignments.
I grew up in an Army family, and patriotism was number one on our list. And so I kind of grew into it. How I got off to the Marine Corps instead of the Army is a whole different story. It probably requires a couple of years to go with it. But I did end up in the Marine Corps. I initially enlisted in 1968. Went on, I got a commission. I stayed in the Marine Corps for 34 years. I served at every level. In the field, I didn't have very many non-Fleet Marine Force assignments. I've been aboard ship a number of times for deployments. I was on the USS Manitoba, the USS Coronado, and the USS Durham for deployments. I've been at Camp Lejeune, Camp Pendleton, Okinawa, a variety of locations overseas, Quantico, and headquarters. And I wrapped that up with my last assignment being in Washington, D.C., and perhaps that's what began to bring into focus all this dishonesty that I was seeing, which was in complete contradiction to what I'd learned.
That's a very important thing, because honor, honesty in the military culture isn't an option. If I tell you my unit's got enough ammunition, you can count on that. If I'm not telling you the truth, people will probably die if it's in combat. Or if you tell me you're ready to attack and you're not, or if somebody tells us that the planes are ready to provide support and they aren't, if somebody lies, it costs lives. So we might stretch the truth a bit when having a beer together, but never in line of duty. Is that a fair statement? That's my culture from the beginning, and I'm sure it's yours, right?
Denny, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Without that absolute trust between us, we're going to kill people on the battlefield. But I think just as important, Denny, is that in the culture from which we came, we also hold people accountable who fail to live up to that honor.
Yes. And that sort of gets to where we're going. We could talk about your military service for hours, and maybe we should later, but I really want to talk about your book, And Justice for All. It's your observation that our nation's justice system isn't very just, at least not reliably always just. I've seen a few instances of that, I think. Talk to us about what you observed and where it took you.
Okay. I get passionate about this, so... You know, it started off with me, as I said, being in Washington and noting the distinct difference in honesty, who was honest and who wasn't. And that bothered me a great deal. I got back into the civilian world, and I saw it in all the aspects out here. I saw it in the courts. I saw it in business. I saw it in the media. And quite frankly, Danny, I just complained about it to my wife. And finally, she said, why don't you make some notes on this and begin to pare an article or a book? So I did. And it came from simply watching the news too long and coming up with too many depressing results. And, you know, if you watch the news, you see these misbehavior at all levels, starting at the very top of our government and coming all the way through, you know, our local level. And so I started to look at a commonality. There's got to be some, why are we misbehaving so badly? And I found what I thought was a commonality, and I bumped into the why, and then I bumped into the who. And quite frankly, it's the lawyer, it's the legal profession. But also, I found that we the people were routinely missing in all of these. I mean, all of these bad things that happen are kind of done outside of we the people. Well, and that prompted me to write the book.
Yeah. Well, we the people are supposed to be paying attention to all this and holding people accountable. That's what a constitutional republic has, accountable people. And too many of us are asleep at the switch, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, I've come up with this position that the lawyers are the common denominator. And they're the foundation of this untruthful behavior. It's where they take their modus operandi into business or media or courts or whatever, and misbehave. There's a woman that wrote an article, Catherine Cruz. She wrote for the Nevada Law Journal, and I found this when I was doing the research for the book. And I have two of these quotes, but she said that the legal profession might be plagued with excessive lawyerly zeal that diverts lawyers away from the multiple dimensions of a client's problems with the larger questions of justice. Winning at all costs serves the financial and reputational interests of lawyers. That's really sad.
Wow.
And a Judge Rifkin, who wrote The Lawyer's Role and Responsibility in Modern Society, said, in actual practice, the ascertainment of truth is not necessarily the target of the trial, and that values other than truth frequently take precedence.
That's scary, right, Mark? That's scary. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our nation's justice system with Mark Lott. We can't have that. And you know, now that you say this, what do prosecutors get reelected by? Their conviction rate. How are lawyers hired by whether they got people off or not? The question is not whether justice was done. Am I right?
You hit the nail right on the head, Denny. You've gotten it precisely. There is no justice without truth. And we don't seem to be in search of truth. We seem to be in search of a win. A win and a lose drives us thing.
That's scary. Okay.
I cite a couple of examples in the book where win-lose is so bad. And generally, it impacts those on the lower end of the financial spectrum, the income spectrum. You know, if you can't afford the right attorney, you're not going to get the right justice. You know, we had that whole NFL thing with the kneeling, and I just thought that was ridiculous, the way they carried their message. But I got to tell you, their message may have been the canary in the coal mine. Their message was, you know, we ain't seeing justice at our level. And I think they're right.
That's scary. But if you think about it, that kind of thing is always there, isn't it? I mean, at least the possibility of it is always there. And we can't have a culture like that. Not if we're interested in freedom and justice and equal opportunity and all that good stuff. Justice, right?
Yeah. If you think of our founding documents, those were the exact words that our founding fathers put in. I mean, they saw the requirement for equal justice for all under the law. And we have just veered too far away from that in favor of a win. I mean, the judge's reputation, the lawyer's reputation, the county or the court's reputation, everybody is on this win. And that's got to change.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that isn't going to be easy. I mean, I think justice conversation is going to be quite new in America. People really need to start thinking about this and doing their own research and taking a look at what things are like. because this is not a common thought, though once people start thinking about it, looking into it, it might be.
You know, we the people have all the power. We just are not organized to exercise that power. Now, since I wrote the book in 18 and 19, it was, I think, published in 20, but it's still apropos, and it still has, I could probably update it with the results of the 20 election and talk about, you know, what happened there. But for example, one of the things I said in my book, I talked about media, and media is populated with lawyers. I mean, you just look it up yourself. The media needs people who are skilled at fact management and crafting of stories. Who better than a lawyer? But if I were to talk to the media, and I think listening now to how people are behaving because they're voting with their money, my message to media management is to lose the lawyers and hire real journalists. Keep your damned opinions to yourself and just give us the facts. Give we the people the facts. We'll sort it out from there.
Well, I'd give everything I own just to get to that one point. There's more to discuss about our justice system, and Mark is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom Troops. It's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, almost every day. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Mark and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues Concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with retired General Mark Lott about his book, And Justice for All. Okay, so where do we start? You know, absent an organized effort, how do individual citizens get involved in changing the trajectory that we're on? One of the challenges I've noticed, my activities both as a prof in political science and being active politically, is that too many citizens don't pay any attention at all to government. Too many people do what I call vote stupid. I always vote Democrat. I always vote Republican. I always vote pro this. I always vote pro that. They don't even know the names of the candidates, much less even the offices they're running for. We don't hold people accountable. We need to start with a wake-up call somewhere, don't we, Brad?
Yeah, we absolutely do. Yes. And it is difficult without an organized effort. You know, I'll back up just a second if I could. And you talked about the uninformed voter. There's probably nothing more dangerous than the uninformed voter. If you look out there and let's just go to the 2018 midterms. That was the first time, at least I think a lot of people saw, at least it brought into focus the rising belief that the Socialist Party was coming and what their values were. You know, the term socialism, socialist, started to come into conversations. But quite frankly, I think the American electorate is out there voting emotionally, and they don't honestly understand who these people are. And if you see some of these interviews done, and they're done as a spoof, admittedly, but I can give examples and have in the book of the very same thing, where people don't have a clue what the Senate or the House of Representatives is, much less who's running. We have an emotional electorate that's following these misdirected candidates. And I think that's the definition of the blind leading the blind. But here's one for you, Denny. Where are the civics lessons that used to be required in high school? Why aren't these kids learning to ask some questions because they know this person's going to be elected for 6 years to an incredibly important office. Where are those classes?
You know, that's a key point. I taught American Government Community College for 15 years. In those 15 years of teaching American government, I had one student who knew why we celebrate the 4th of July. Civics isn't there. I say it's the role of parents to teach civics as well as values, because it's sure not happening in schools.
It isn't, but I think that's someplace that we the people, we the parents and grandparents, have to go to the schools and say, what the hell are you teaching? If you haven't taught my kids why we fought the Revolutionary War, we've got a big disconnect. And the fact is, most kids don't know anything about the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
I think we need public education and awareness training about the government, because low information voters are a danger to our republic.
They are, because that's typically an emotional vote. And it's crazy, but it's our country. And we're the ones responsible for it. And we have to be holding our elected officials and others accountable, which means we have to be paying attention, but we have to know what we're paying attention to. Mark, this is a crazy situation, but this is a good wake-up call. Let's stay on this. What kind of accountability system can we come up with?
That's a really good question. It's wide. I think that we have to start, this is just my own personal opinion, I think we have to start with the judges, because they're going to be the first to influence the legal system. And I think those judges have to be held to a very, very strict code of conduct. And I think that when we have judicial complaints, we have to take that authority away from the organizations that judges now, because we need to have we the people have to say, judge, you did step over the line. Now, you may get four or five lawyers to jump in and defend him, but this isn't about defending. This is about finding justice. So I think judges will respond very quickly if they know they're being held to a standard that says you are responsible for ethics and honesty in your courtroom. And there's a civilian review panel that's going to watch your every court for the next 2 years, and we're going to grade you. And if you don't have a grade of, let's just say, 90 or above, you are not eligible to run again. You must retire. There's a way to do it. I think we can come up with a matrix. And I put that in a book and I go into some detail on it, but I think we could create a matrix and they could have it on their desk all day long as they're judging and say, boy, I better listen up. I'm letting this guy slide a little bit. I've got to ensure honesty and truthfulness and get to justice at the end of this court. So I think it starts with them. And then I think we have to go out in the public sector and we have to find those people who have misbehaved. And Denny, we can't let them just walk away. You came from an environment. I came from an environment. Every veteran listening to this show today came from an environment. If they were late for formation, they were held accountable. You know, they didn't have to do a felony to be held accountable. If they were late for formation, they were hauled up with morning colors.
Yes, sir.
We have to have that kind of accountability with our public servants. Now go back and look at what has gone on. Let's just say, pick a number, say 10. 10 years. Count back 10 years. Look at the misbehavior. Denny, the outright things that are being proven now as lies. And yet, nobody's held accountable. They just flaunt it. But you'll still go in the courtroom this afternoon. You'll find some young kid in an orange jumpsuit chained up. And he's being held responsible for some probation violation. And we'll spend $10,000 to beat him into submission. That's wrong. We have to start at the top, Denny. That's where we start.
Mark, how could we have a legal system that doesn't have that set of values built into it?
Well, that gets hard. Our laws, I love the study of law. I started off in pre-law. I love the study of law, but I don't like the convolutions that it's taken. So I'll give you this as an example. We need people who write laws that you and I can understand. We have to have laws that we can understand. And I'll bet you, I mean, you're an educated man. I'll bet you that if you pulled open, let's take the state of Michigan and looked up, for example, murder, you're not going to find a definition of murder that you completely understand. There are going to be pages and pages and pages of it. I would suggest we go to the other end of that spectrum, go to the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. I understand that. I got it. Even a Marine can understand that. That's simple. So we need to take the laws and make them less convoluted, make them clear so the average person can understand them. So that means that we're going to have legislators who write laws that can be understood and enforced.
Wow. You hit the nail right on the head, Mark. Okay, Mark, this goes on and on, but I think we have to hold our legislators, the people that we personally vote for, and who we should at least know most of them, at least talk to them, communicate with them somehow, or how can they represent us if we don't communicate? We got to start with them.
Absolutely. Imagine if we went to them after they, or before they gave a speech and said, okay, today you're going to stand up here and you're going to make some promises and I'm going to write them down. And after I've written them down, I'm going to print them up and I'm going to put them on a billboard. And once a month, I'm going to see if you've done what you promised us you can do. And if you're not doing it, you're out.
Wow.
We need a check sheet.
That works. Mark, we could go on forever, and I wish we could. How can listeners buy a copy of And Justice for All? This book's got to be in every home.
I appreciate that. It's at Barnes & Noble. It can be ordered. And it's probably easy on Amazon as well. There are a number of books out there with the same title, I found out later, but mine is And Justice for All by Bradley M. Lott. For those who don't particularly like to read, this is a very short book. My publisher told me if you want to get your message out, write it short because people like to be able to get to the point and make their decisions and move on. And that's what this book does.
Mark, thank you. And Justice for All by Bradley Lott. Mark, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for this book. Thank you for this call to action to our fellow Americans. Thank you, brother.
Thank you much. Thank you for having me. Semper Fi.
Amen. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking about how Berry Law helps veterans, especially those who have VA claims denied. Then Army veteran Ian Newell will discuss moving from military to civilian employment. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, Military History, and our Armed America Report. Troops, I'm not fond of pain. I absolutely won't use addicting products. That's why I can recommend Day 3 Creation products if you're in pain. Use the code FREEDOM when you order at day3creation.com and save 20%. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones. Grab some protein. Rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.